It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new study shows how human-caused climate change is significantly reducing snowpack in Wisconsin and beyond, and this will affect water resources and communities that have recreational economies that depend on snow. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Alex Gottlieb is a doctoral student in the Ecology, Evolution, Environment, and Society program at Dartmouth College, where he studies climate impacts. Alex, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Good. You and your colleague examined winter snowpack in the Northern Hemisphere for the past 40 years. What stands out?
What really stands out is that we are able to, for the first time as a scientific community, really identify when and where and by how much our human-caused climate change has been affecting snow around the planet. And what we see is that, as we might expect, the warming that we've caused in recent decades through our greenhouse gas emissions has been reducing snowpack in places like the United States, particularly the central part of the country, Wisconsin, where you are, pretty substantially by about 5% a decade or so over the last 40 years. So multiply that out, and we're looking at something like 20% less snow on the ground come March than we would have seen, say, back in 1980.
We'll step back for just a moment to give us some working knowledge here. How is snowpack defined?
So when we're talking about snowpack, we're really talking about the amount of water contained in snow. If you were to walk outside right now, if you're somewhere where there's snow on the ground, and melt all of that snow instantly, how much water would you have coming out of that? And we really care about the amount of water that's contained in snow because in so many parts of the world, it's a really, really crucial part of the water supply and water security. In places like the Western US in particular, snow accumulates in the mountains during the winter, which is a time of year when water demands by people are generally really low. It's not the growing season. We're not using it for irrigation. We don't need as much power from hydroelectric dams, for instance. And it stores that water in the form of snow. And then that water will gradually melt out in the streams and soils in the spring and summer months as things heat up and our demands for that water really increase. So it's sort of this amazing natural reservoir that is accumulating water and bridging that supply and demand gap. And so if we can know how much snow is on the ground, how deep that snowpack is, we can have a really good idea of how much water is going to be coming downstream in the warmer months when that snow melts out.
And through that natural reservoir, as you call it, like the snowpack can have multiple layers of snow, I would imagine, each from a different snowfall. What happens through this layering effect?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's really why we focus on this snowpack quantity versus, say, the total amount of snowfall that occurs throughout the winter, because it's really integrating all of those different storms. You can think of it as the total amount that accumulates throughout the winter. Say you get a storm and that drops some snow, but maybe you get a warm period and a bit of that melts out. You get another storm. As you said, you build up these layers. And so it's sort of the total amount that you're accumulating. And again, that's the quantity that we really care about, because how much we accumulate throughout the winter season, say, and that's why we measure it at a time like March, that's sort of at the end of the accumulation season when we're more or less done getting snow coming in and it's going to start melting out, that gives us a really good idea of how much water is going to be, say, flowing through our rivers and streams in the coming spring and summer months as that snowpack melts out.
We're talking with Alex Gottlieb, who is a doctoral student at Dartmouth, co-author of a new study on snow cover as we look at the declining amount of snowpack. You can join in with questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Alex, the National Weather Service says much of Wisconsin is experiencing drought or abnormally dry conditions. And it also says January temps in the upper Mississippi River Valley were above average by 3 to 9 degrees. How do the warmer temperatures affect precipitation in the winter?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. We generally expect that warmer temperatures are going to be much less favorable for snow and snow accumulation, and particularly in places like Wisconsin that are cold during the winter, but not so cold that 3 to 9 degrees of warming, which is pretty dramatic, that is just going to dramatically increase the likelihood that that storm that comes through is now dropping rain instead of snow because that warming has pushed you above the freezing point, or that even on days where no precipitation is coming in, that you're going to have these warm temperatures in the wintertime that can melt out a lot of the snow that may have fallen earlier and accumulated on the ground. So that's one of the really key relationships that we identify in this work, is that in places like a lot of the United States, and particularly a lot of the central part of the country, like where you are, or in the Northeast, like where I am, where winters are generally cold and snowy, but not super cold, our snow is incredibly sensitive to warming. So even a couple degrees can pretty dramatically reduce the amount of snow that we're getting again, because, the likelihood that that next little bit of warming pushes you above the freezing point where you're now getting rain instead of snow, or you're melting out a lot of snow on the ground, just takes off exponentially.
I wonder too, to perhaps a much lesser degree, do strong winds affect snowpack? Like it's not just temperatures?
Yeah, absolutely. We think temperature is really one of the dominant drivers. It's, at the end of the day, snow is frozen water and you need temperatures below freezing to keep it in that state. But yeah, absolutely. Winds can really redistribute snow on the land surface too, particularly in, kind of the central part of the country, which is quite windy, especially during the winter time. Those blowing winds can sort of take snow that's fallen on the ground and, redistribute it quite far away.
Well, let's take a call now. Randy is with us in Ripon. Randy, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. Years ago, I used to belong to the Isaac Walton League in the city of Green Lake, and they did had a guest come and do a presentation. He had researched the lake freezing and ice going out. And I believe, if my memory serves me, he went back to the late 1800s. And he did these graphs for his presentation, and looking at that, I was like, well, you can't argue against global warming, because every year, and this year the lake didn't even freeze. Every year it froze over later and later and later, and ice went out earlier and earlier and earlier. And just to me, just being there and seeing this, I'm 67 years old, so I've seen a lot of weather, and things are not the same from when I was younger.
So this really opened your eyes to climate change.
Well, yeah. It really validated that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Alex, why is something like that type of presentation, or the modeling that you're doing with Snowpack, why is that so valuable?
I think that last caller makes a really, really good point, is that we tend to have a pretty strong emotional connection to snow and ice in winter. And a lot of us, just because of, say, the recreational opportunities it provides, skating on ponds or ice fishing or skiing or snowmobiling, we really value this cold and winter time that gives us snow and ice and affords these opportunities. And so it's something that we pay attention to and we notice. And I think a lot of us, have this general sense that, yeah, absolutely, winters aren't as cold as they used to be, or we're not getting as much snow as we used to. And I think presentations like that one about ice in and ice out dates, or the work that we do showing just how much climate change has reduced snow, I think really validates a lot of these stories that we kind of intuitively tell ourselves and understand about how winters have been changing.
Alex Gottlieb is a researcher at Dartmouth investigating climate change-driven snowpack trends. And you can call in with a question. Add your comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As more than one-third of Wisconsin is experiencing drought conditions, especially the northern part of the state, a new study in the journal Nature investigates the loss of snowpack in the northern hemisphere and the potential consequences. Call in with a question. You can share thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Alex Gottlieb is a doctoral student studying climate change at Dartmouth College. Alex, so you have the snowpack, which becomes the water from snowpack is then snow melt. What are the consequences that, you know, less snowfall could have in the Midwest, you know, pertaining to that snow melt?
Sure. So, you know, in places like the Midwest, we're not necessarily as concerned about snowpack from a water supply perspective in the way that we are in places like the Western U.S. and the Rocky Mountains in California, where the snow that accumulates in the mountains during the winter is really the water that you're going to have during these crucial times of year in the spring and summer when we really need that water. In places like the Midwest, we get a bit more precipitation year round. So we still get rainfall during the spring and summer months, which can meet some of those demands. So the water security implications aren't necessarily quite as dire in a place like Wisconsin or in a, you know, river basin like the Mississippi River Basin, for instance. But there are still a lot of hazards posed by these changing snow patterns. If we think back to 2019 and the really devastating floods that a lot of the upper Midwest saw early in the spring, so much of that was caused by the fact that we had some snow on the ground still, but it got really warm really quickly, and we had a lot of rainfall on that snow, which melted it out very quickly. And because a lot of the ground beneath that snow was still pretty frozen, that water had nowhere to go but over the surface and caused some truly devastating flooding. So I think in terms of the hazards that changes to snow are going to pose in a place like the Midwest, those types of rain on snow events are going to become increasingly a problem, again, as temperatures warm and just the likelihood that any individual storm is going to dump rain instead of snow goes up, which has the potential to melt out any snow that's on the ground really quickly. Or even if there isn't snow on the ground, but the ground is still somewhat frozen, then that rainfall is just going to run off over the surface.
It sounds like that timing is going to become very sensitive to any type of, you know, triggering other, you know, a catastrophe. You know, as part of your study, you developed this model that predicts when snowfall starts to decline in a region. And can you kind of explain that modeling and what you found?
Yeah, absolutely. So the question that we were trying to answer there was, why do some places seem to be losing snow really, really quickly? And why have we seen such dramatic losses over the last 40 years? While some other places, not a whole lot's been happening to snow. Their levels have stayed pretty constant, or in some places, it's even actually been increasing. And so that was the puzzle that we were sort of trying to figure out there. And what we realized by looking at all of the data of snowpack and temperature is that how sensitive your snow is to changes in temperature, basically what percentage of your snow you could expect to lose with a degree of warming, is really non-linear based on what your average winter temperatures are. And what that means is that if you're somewhere that's really cold in the wintertime, you can warm a little bit and not a whole lot is going to happen to your snowpack because you're so cold that even with that warming, most of your precipitation in the wintertime is still going to be falling as snow instead of rain. You're not likely to get these big, warm midwinter thaws that melt out snow on the ground. So your snow will look about the same as it always has. But as you get warmer in terms of your average wintertime temperatures, and we really see this start to emerge in places that are about 17 degrees Fahrenheit on average in the winter and warmer, that's where you start to see snow losses emerging. We have this threshold where once your average temperatures are warmer than 17 degrees, each additional bit of warming beyond that point is going to cause you to lose more and more snow on average. So say the first degree of warming beyond that point might take 5% of your snowpack, but the next degree might take 10 to 15%, and then the next 15 to 20 or so. And so what you get is, if you're somewhere whose average winter temperatures are warmer than the 17 degrees, you can see really rapidly emerging and even accelerating losses of your snow with even modest amounts of warming.
Oh, wow.
And because so much of the United States, our temperatures are kind of above this threshold of 17 degrees in the winter, that's why we've seen such dramatic snow losses in some of these places with the amount of warming that we've seen so far, because we're just in a place where our typical wintertime temperatures make our snow incredibly sensitive to warming.
We're talking about the declining amount of snow in winter. Alex Gottlieb with us is a doctoral student at Dartmouth and co-author of a new study in the journal Nature and Snowpack. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Kathy in Franklin is here. Kathy, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
My question is how the temperatures have been affecting the frost line, and if the frost line is changing, does that also affect the snowpack? And how, you know, cause I thought that the ground had to freeze during the winter, and then the snow kept it frozen. You know, could you explain that?
Thank you, Kathy. Yes.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Kathy. The way that soil frost and snow interact is actually a bit counterintuitive. The thing about snow is that it's a really, really good insulator. So when you have a nice deep snowpack on the ground, that's actually keeping the soil beneath it a lot warmer than it otherwise would be if there was no snow on top of it. So that relationship, it actually isn't quite as clear. You know, there's even an expectation that in places where we're losing snow, you can actually get more deep frost in the soil because you don't have that nice protective blanket keeping the soil warm, which has a host of consequences for ecosystems. Now, kind of the roots and other parts of the ground are exposed to freezing. All of the organisms that live in the soil that are used to having sort of this nice warm blanket over them in the wintertime are now going to be exposed to potentially colder temperatures.
Yeah, I would imagine, too, that winters without enough snow would affect the soil quality in areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, just this increased variability in the winter where we have, you know, more spells where it's above freezing, where we have, say, some rainfall that enters the soil but then might freeze. That freeze thaw in the soil column is something that can definitely affect sort of the quality and structure of that soil in ways that, as a scientific community, we're really just starting to try to understand what the impacts of that are.
I keep having that number 17 degrees in my head, and I'm just wondering, is Wisconsin in particular warming to the extent that snow cover will become more rare here in the winter?
Yeah, so, you know, average temperatures in Wisconsin are certainly a bit warmer than 17 degrees on average,
yes.
Which what we're looking at there is just the average temperature from November through March, which means that you're in a place where we expect to lose snow with warming, and we expect to lose increasing amounts of snow with more and more warming. I should say that this is all kind of a long-term perspective. That's not to say that we won't still get really big snowstorms from time to time, or even really snowy winters, whole years where we get a lot of snow piling up on the ground. But what this work shows is that when you're somewhere warmer than that 17 degrees, those are just going to increasingly become the exception rather than the norm and the expectation. The more we warm when you're somewhere that's warmer than the 17 degrees, the more you're just really loading the dice against good snowy conditions.
Will this snowpack modeling continue? Will this research continue?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we're really trying to do with it is, in this paper, we take very much a water security focus for all of the reasons we were talking about earlier about how snow is such an important part of water supply in a lot of the world. But The fact is that the impacts of something like snow loss are going to be felt very differently in different places. In places like Wisconsin or the Northeast where I am, the water security implications of snow loss might not be quite as significant as places like the Western U.S., but at the same time, we have entire local economies that are built around having, you know, a nice persistent snowpack through the winter, places that are reliant on winter recreation, like downhill or cross-country skiing or snowshoeing or snowmobiling. These are all places that have built their economies around having this expectation of a good persistent snowpack during the winter that, you know, we potentially expect to experience a lot of disruption with this emerging snow loss, even in
Alex, places. Thank you so much for joining us. Alex Gottlieb, doctoral candidate at Dartmouth College. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.